This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, Now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Good morning. It's Tuesday, May the 11th, 2021. Welcome to Now with Dave Brown, coming to you on AMI Audio and AMI TV. I'm Dave Brown. Let's hit the horns and go. Coming up on the show today, can the removal of beef on menus and recipes really help tackle climate change? Environmental contributor Lawrence Gunther addresses this question and discusses the carbon footprint of beef. Community reporter Elizabeth Moeller will tell you about an upcoming Apple event that is seeking feedback from users who are blind and partially sighted. Nelson Rago of Cool Blind Tech describes the e-guide dog, a prototype for a navigational robotic dog on wheels. And then Karen McGee is back to compete against myself and Mark Phoenix in the weekly news quiz. Our boss, Andy Frank, pulled in the W last week. He took the crown and ran away, and he will not be welcomed back. You don't get to win the news quiz as a guest. You're supposed to knuckle up to us and let us take wins. But no, Andy got the win last week. But Karen McGee is back in the fold this week. Let's begin the show with our top story of the day, and that is an update on COVID-19 in Canada. Let's begin with the active caseloads. Currently, there are 79,630 active cases of COVID-19 in Canada. 24,682 people have died. Manitoba is expanding financial assistance to help some businesses affected by tightened restrictions prompted by COVID cases surging to near record levels in the province. Premier Brian Pallister says health orders helped keep variants out of the province for longer than other provinces, but he says now they are here and action needs to be taken.
So we delayed the third wave, but we're in the third wave. So what's the challenge now? And the challenge is simple. We have to shorten that wave. And the way we shorten that wave is we follow public health orders and we get vaccinated.
The public orders came into effect on Sunday and closed restaurants, bars and patios, as well as gyms, museums and hair salons. The grant program allows businesses to apply for up to $5,000. British Columbia's provincial health officer says COVID-19 measures will eventually be loosened across the province at the same time, despite varying caseloads by region. Dr. Bonnie Henry says the virus continues to evolve.
We will be looking at a vision of where our post-pandemic world is going to be, recognizing that this virus is going to be with us for some time. We don't know how long. Likely years. It may be a time when it turns into yet another respiratory virus that doesn't cause severe illness in most people. And that's where we hope to get with immunization.
The province recorded 1,759 cases of COVID over the last 3 days, along with 20 deaths, most of them among people over the age of 70. Let's look at the vaccination story across the country. The provinces and territories administered over 340,000 doses of vaccine yesterday. 16.25 million doses have been given in total. With over 18.1 million vaccines delivered, 89.55% of supply has been used. According to the New York Times, 40% of the population has received at least one shot, which ranks 13th globally. That's third in the G7. And then a report emerging from the Globe and Mail this morning that's been picked up on by the Canadian press. The Globe and Mail is reporting that Alberta has stopped administering first doses of the Oxford AstraZeneca COVID vaccine in favor of other types of immunization. The newspaper quotes Kristen Klein, the co-lead of the province's vaccine task force, as saying the province has decided to shift to mRNA vaccines for first doses. The report says the move is partly due to greater supply of mRNA shots and partly due to concerns over a rare blood clot condition linked to AstraZeneca. Klein says AstraZeneca shots will still be made available to those who do not want an mRNA vaccine or who cannot receive one for health reasons. She also says in the report that a decision has not yet been made on what shot will be administered as a second dose to those who were already given a shot of AstraZeneca. Ontario has become the latest province to signal it will likely mix COVID-19 vaccine brands. Emily Javeski explains.
Health Minister Christine Elliott says it's likely that Ontarians who have received a dose of the AstraZeneca vaccine may get a different shot for their second dose. Quebec has also said that it plans to mix vaccines due to supply shortages. Some doctors question further use of Oxford AstraZeneca over the slim chance of blood clots. Canada is set to receive a flood of Pfizer and Moderna shots. Dr. Theresa Tam, Canada's top doctor, has said that officials are closely following the results of a UK study on mixing doses. Emily Dravesky, The Canadian Press, Toronto.
Staying in Ontario, Ontario healthcare workers are being added to a list of high-risk employees who can begin booking their second COVID-19 vaccine by the end of the week. Don Kelly has more.
Healthcare workers were among the first groups to be prioritized for a first dose of the shot when Ontario began administering vaccines earlier this year. The province then extended dosing intervals from 21 days to 4 months, which means many workers are still waiting for their second dose. The province says all hospital and acute care staff in frontline roles, medical first responders, and long-term care home and retirement home healthcare workers will now be able to get their second dose faster, with details coming soon. Don Kelly, The Canadian Press, Toronto.
And now looking abroad over the Atlantic, Britain will soon begin a major easing of COVID-19 lockdown restrictions as the country's case levels continue to decline. Tom Rivers has the story.
Many freedoms finally coming back in the UK after months of severe lockdown restrictions. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson says those measures paused the country,
giving us the time to vaccinate more than two-thirds of all adults across the UK, with more than one-third also receiving their second dose, and thereby unquestionably saving many lives.
Among some of the easing measures, the reopening of pubs and restaurants indoors and allowing two households to meet up inside a home. Tom Rivers, ABC News, London.
Let's take a look at our daily polls. On Monday, we asked you, do you wear your masks when you are outdoors? 24% of you said always, 33% of you said sometimes, 33% of you said rarely, and 10% of you said never. Now, this one coming to you today at AMI Audio on Twitter, Accessible Media Inc. on Facebook. Did you enjoy filling out your 2021 census? And I also want you to let us know if you had any accessibility issues in terms of accessing that website. So the options here are yes, no, or I did not receive one. And because that third option's on the table, that's where we're going to go to Sam Robinson first for his thoughts on this question.
I think that's nice of you to come to me, Dave. I think I added that one in mostly because I wasn't sure if I had gotten one yet. And I was just looking up on the computer here, just double checking. How does it get delivered? It should be through the mail. And I only say that was because the last time I had to do mine over the phone. But I also live on student family housing, so I'm not sure about how the census gets delivered to technically campuses in Canada. I would love to do it. As soon as I get the census, I can't wait to put down all of that information on there, like how long my commute is. I get up out of bed and I go to the office door right there.
Yeah, I think the census numbers are going to get a little messed up this year if people are only applying the last 12 months of commuting policy.
I saw that on Twitter, actually. There was somebody who was saying, my census is going to be a little bit strange. Congratulations, historians from the future.
Yeah, exactly.
Found a very interesting piece of data.
I'm similar to you, Sam. I totally nerded out. I got mine in the mail and right away I ran to my computer. I was like, I'm going to fill this out. Yeah. And I was so excited when I found out I got the long form. I was like, oh, yeah.
Love answering questions about myself.
I am very much an egomaniac as well. Nasreen Abdelmajid, I don't know if the census filling out duties fall upon you and your household. So did you enjoy it?
The excitement is unreal, Dave. Thankfully, my mom filled it out for all of us. So I didn't have to deal with that. It was a long, long process. But the good thing that I heard about is that you can access it online, so it's accessible from there. So that would have been beneficial for me. So I would have gotten it done online for my case.
We just had a note sent to me by our senior producer, Andrika Delanerol, who said she was hoping there'd be more questions on her census. She felt disappointed that she only got the short form. let's bring in Mike Ross. Mike Ross, did you enjoy filling out the census, or was this handed off to your partner?
No, we haven't actually done it yet, but we will. I, in the past, have avoided the census You know, like I avoid potholes with my car, like just completely change lanes. I want nothing to do with it. And I'll tell you what changed my mind. It's our, both of our, my wife and I, our interest in genealogy and watching some of these genealogy shows and seeing how important the census can be in researching your family tree. It comes into play in a huge way for a lot of researchers out there.
Oh, wow.
So all the government stuff aside, the importance that it can play in genealogical research is something that sort of hits home for us. So I will absolutely be completing the 2021 census.
Nessie, that's a fun fact to add into the mix too. Thank you for that one. Mike, I want to hear from you out there in listener land and the viewer vortex as well. Find us on social media at AMI Audio on Twitter, Accessible Media Inc. on Facebook. Did you enjoy filling out your census, yes or no? And please let us know if you did have some accessibility issues in terms of the website or any other forms of access in regards to the census. We're definitely curious to hear your experience with that one as well. Let's go back to Nazreen Abdel-Majid, who has your national weather update.
Thanks, Dave. Here is your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada. In St. John's, mix of sun and clouds, chance of showers and a high of 11. Halifax, mix of sun and clouds, chance of showers and a high of 15. In Montreal, we're expecting mix of sun and clouds, 60% chance of showers and a high of 12. Ottawa, cloudy, 70% chance of showers and a high of 9. In Toronto, mix of sun and clouds, becoming cloudy, 60% chance of showers and a high of 14. Thunder Bay, becoming a mix of sun and clouds with a high of 14 and a wind chill of minus 6. In Winnipeg, mainly sunny with a high of 19. Saskatoon, also mainly sunny with a high of 21. Calgary, mix of sun and clouds, 60% chance of showers. There's a risk of a thunderstorm with a high of 13. In Edmonton, mix of sun and clouds, 60% chance of showers with a risk of a thunderstorm with a high of 16. In Yellowknife, clearing with a high of 5 and a wind chill of minus 10. Moving to Vancouver, mainly sunny with a high of 17. And in Victoria, sunny, cloudiness increasing with a high of 17. And that was your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada.
Thank you very much, Nazreen. Coming up next, can the removal of beef on menus and recipes really help tackle climate change? Environmental contributor Lawrence Gunther will address this as he discusses the carbon footprint of beef. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. A couple of weeks ago, the food website Epicurious announced they will no longer publish menus with beef recipes in an effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Joining us now to help make sense of the carbon footprint of beef is our environmental contributor, Lawrence Gunther. And Lawrence is also the host of the AMI original podcast, Outdoors with Lawrence Gunther. Hey, good morning, Lawrence.
Good morning, Dave.
So, Lawrence, let's start here. Just so we all know, what is a climate-conscious foodie?
Yeah, you know, it's an evolving kind of situation, right? I mean, foodies were all about fashionable food, and then it sort of morphed into include what's good for you, you know, good for your heart, good for your belly, good for your diet, all that stuff. And now it's gone into whole sustainability side. Like, is it socially ethical and moral? And is it environmentally sustainable? Like, is it causing climate change? And people want to eat right now. It's like there's all these questions coming up.
We've come a long way since the Epic Mealtime guys were doing bacon strips over and over and over again. So Epicurious is joining a growing number of climate conscious foodies who are taking the stand to help with the environment. So what does it mean when a company like this takes a proactive approach?
You know, there's going to be winners and losers, Dave. I mean, it's one thing to be neutral just in the background, you know, hey, don't look at me, I'm just the food company. But more and more, you know, companies are expected to step up. Look how many companies stepped up on the whole BIPOC thing, Black Lives Matter, right? I mean, at some point, a company has to say, look, I'm going to get on the bandwagon here, and I'm going to lend my influence to a good cause, the right cause. And if it means losing some customers, well, maybe I'll gain some customers. And in the end, hopefully it won't get worse. You know, maybe it'll stay the same. Maybe it'll get a bit better. But yeah, you can't just sit on the sidelines anymore.
Although sometimes getting involved and getting off the sidelines can cause a little bit of a backlash. For example, the regional chain Earl's restaurants had a bit of a rough time when they announced they'd be making an announcement regarding beef a couple years ago in Alberta. So what happened there? Didn't go so well, did it?
No way. You know, I remember you and I ate at the Earl's restaurant in Whitehorse.
Sure did. Sure did. Whenever I traveled with my old producer, Lisa Noh, she always insisted we went to an Earl's because they're very popular in the prairies in the West. And man, they make good food.
Well, they are. And there are 67 restaurants and almost all of them are in Alberta. So when the owner of this restaurant chain said, you know what? He was convinced that he needed to take a stand on climate change, but more on animal welfare. So he wanted to find a provider of beef that could provide certified humane beef. You know, the animals were all raised morally and ethically. Their welfare was all properly taken care of to the highest possible standards. He found a farm in the United States. He said, okay, we're going to do animal welfare. We're doing certified humane. And it's all coming from this one farm in the United States. And the Albertan said, what? You think our beef is raised inhumanely, and now you're not even going to serve beef grown in Alberta? Well, that was a huge issue, right? So they boycotted all the restaurants. The owner came within a month. The whole thing was turned around. You know, for the next 6 months, that owner was still apologizing, and there's no mention of humane certified on that restaurant website anymore.
Yeah, sometimes the backlash can get you for sure. Sometimes you have to know what your customer base is, and you also understand that sometimes people are just going to get riled up, right? They see something they don't like, and they're going to jump on that bandwagon. Okay, Lawrence, let's start kind of putting this in perspective a little bit. Yeah. Though, because I know you and I both enjoy a hamburger or a steak from time to time. So how much beef should we be cutting back on personally if we're really going to be making a meaningful contribution to reducing greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, let's look at the footprint or the hoof print on this, right? So good pun, eh?
I like that.
Yeah, me too. I just came up with that. So you think about cattle in pasture, it takes 20 times more land and they produce 20 times more greenhouse gases than it does to grow the equivalent amount of protein using something like soya, right? A plant. So there's a huge thing, right? 20 times and 20 times more gas and 20 times more space. So that's a big thing. Now, if we just decided to eat one less meal of beef a month, just one less meal of beef, that would make a pretty sizable impact right away. Now, if we went a little further and we said, okay, let's cut back our red meat consumption by 25%, and out of that remaining 75%, we're going to have beef 1/4 of the time and pork 75% of the time, you would be lowering the amount of greenhouse gases going into the atmosphere from the livestock sector. So that's chickens, turkeys, you know, milk cows, all of it. You would be lowering it by 10%. 10% reduction in greenhouse gases coming from the livestock sector, which is not insignificant. The livestock sector produces a lot of greenhouse gases. So, you know, it's totally within our realm of feasibility without having to go to becoming a vegetarian or a vegan. And we talked about that the other day. But it, you know, you don't have to give up. It's flexitarian, right? It's this whole balance. So, yeah, we could do it.
Yeah, it doesn't always need to be drastic choices. It can be small choices. And I will say, if you're going to take the hamburger out of my hand, a pork chop will go a long way to convincing me to do something different.
Rips.
Lawrence, I think I know the answer to this question, but it's worth asking anyway because we hear these terms tossed out a lot. What is better to eat for the planet, grass-fed beef or beef raised on feedlots?
Well, I've been looking into this a little bit because I thought about that and I thought you might be asking that. And, you know, we always think of feedlots, you know, where they corral the cattle and they give them super high test kind of food, lots of corns and grains, you know, it gives it the meat, that nice marbled look and tasty. I mean, we've all become sort of, you know, we learned to love that kind of beef. We've been hooked on it like crack cocaine. My goodness, it's so tasty. But, you know, we always think of that as really stinky, right? Because of the amount of, you know, sewage and all that being produced. And we think, well, isn't it nice to have them on the field and they're just roaming around eating grass? Turns out, though, that grass is harder to digest, creates more methane gas and other gases, and the cows produce more greenhouse gases, the cattle, when they're on pasture. But, big but here, you have pasture. That's grass. That's soil. That's roots in the soil. That's all carbon sequestration. And if you're sequestering carbon in the grass and in the soil, in the roots, then that's a plus. So the net impact in terms of greenhouse gas, you're better off probably eating pasture red beef, raised beef. And it's a flavor you got to get used to, right? It doesn't happen overnight, but it's got more flavor. It's got more beef flavor and less sort of just fatty flavor, because it's a leaner meat, but it's much better for you and it's better for the planet. So pasture raised, thumbs up.
So Lawrence, speaking of that, we're going to make you Dr. Lawrence here for this next question. Mm-hmm. Do the benefits of eating less beef go beyond climate change?
The Lancet Journal says that we should be eating 25%, you know, less beef. We should only be eating one meal of beef a week, right? That's what they're saying. You know, and I don't know why, but I guess because, you know, the most times we eat beef, it's in the form of burgers and they're not lean. It's not like a extra lean kind of meat, right? It's not where we can cut all the fat away and we're just eating the beef itself. We're eating a lot of fat and that's not good for the heart. And a lot of us aren't that active. I mean, if we're all out there running around, cutting down trees and chasing rabbits and, you know, doing stuff in the outdoors, it wouldn't be such a big deal, but we're not that kind of people anymore. So storing animal fat in our body is making us, you know, fatter, and it's making our hearts less, efficient. So yeah, they're saying, you know, we really need to cut back eating beef by to maybe one meal a week. That's a little scary.
Yeah, and it comes down a little bit to choice. So overall, Lawrence, what are your thoughts on the aspect of this becoming a matter of personal choice?
I got kids that are, you know, young teens, you know, with me again. And I think I'd be done with that. I know. Did it again.
These puns are utterly ridiculous.
But these Gen Zs, right? They really, you know, they're seeing the stuff on their phones, on their tablets all the time, this kind of information. They don't want to eat beef all the time. They don't want to eat fast food and food that's not good for you. And so we've been making deliberate choices, you know, flexitarian type choices. And it's not something you jump into, you know, right away. You can, but it's like going on a diet. You know, it's just difficult to stay on. And it's something you just slide into little by little. And I think we all have that choice. And I think now it's not so much a personal choice anymore. It's a choice we all have to start to make, because it's something we can do to fight climate change. And we all need to fight climate change. We know we need to bring those numbers down. We know we need to stop temperatures from increasing, stop greenhouse gases from increasing. Here's an easy win for all of us to do, and it's going to be good for us as well.
Yeah, Lawrence, I think that's been the theme of a lot of our conversations that we've had in the last couple of months between you and I, that it's not about one singular silver bullet. It's about making a lot of small changes. Now, there are drastic overall changes systemically that need to be made, but we can do a lot in terms of small individual personal choices.
Yeah, I agree, Dave. I agree. Yeah.
So, Lawrence, what's coming up this weekend on Outdoors with Lawrence Gunther?
Well, what's planned right now is our blind kayaking adventure stuff. Ooh. How to white water, everything from white water to sea kayaking and everything in between. And starting Friday, it's the May long weekend, time to head out to the cabin. So if you're a blind person, what kind of cabin do you want?
One that my personal chauffeur can get me to in relatively short order.
That's a big one for sure, right? Because who wants to be stuck at the cabin with the wheels?
Well, a couple of years ago, Lawrence, I was thinking about applying to become a Canadian senator. And to be a senator in Canada, you have to own some land. And I was a renter at the time. And I said to myself, okay, well, what if I just bought a parcel of land south of the city of Ottawa and built myself a little cottage? And to be honest, there was lots of land available that wasn't too expensive. But then I kind of realized, how am I going to get there on the weekends? I can't just take an Uber to the cottage.
No, you could. You could, but...
you might be a little stranded, and that's how a horror movie starts.
Yeah, the guy who's driving you is going to be living in the cabin, and you're going to be sleeping outside.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Lawrence, always fun catching up with you, my friend. Have yourself a great day.
You too, Dave.
That's Lawrence Gunther. He's the host of the AMI audio podcast, Outdoors with Lawrence Gunther, which you can also hear in show form Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern time right here on AMI audio. Coming up after the break, we will get to Mike's big business story of the day. But I do want to mention another AMI audio podcast that's dropping today, Yogi's Guide to Health and Wellness. A new episode of that show drops today. Listen as host Kevin Naidoo speaks with Chris Ketch, a former entrepreneur who did a complete life overhaul, selling his home, business, and material possessions to pursue life on the opposite spectrum of the Western daily grind. That's a Yogi's Guide to Health and Wellness, available on all major podcasting platforms. Before we get to the break and before we get to Mike Ross and the big business story of the day, here is Canadian press reporter Karen Rebo with your morning business minutes.
Canada's main stock index and the Dow Jones Industrials fell yesterday after setting record highs in intraday trading. Analysts think the market is just catching its breath after a full week of data while dealing with big tech drops and rising coronavirus infections in several Asian countries. Toronto's TSX index closed 110 points lower to 19,361. New York's Dow Jones average lost 34 points, and the NASDAQ Composite Index tumbled 350 points, or 2.6%. In Tokyo this morning, Japan's Nikkei Index tanked 909 points, 3.1%, and our dollar is trading overseas this morning at 82.55 cents U.S., down a bit from yesterday's 82.68. Sleep Country Canada Holdings says its net income surged in the first quarter as sales grew, even though its stores were closed for more days than a year ago. The Toronto-based retailer says it earned $8.7 million for the period ended March 31st. From the Canadian Press Business Desk, I'm Karen Rebo.
Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. We'll get to Mike Ross and the big business story of the day in just a couple of moments. But I want to share a couple of stories from the world of federal politics with you. New Democrats have joined forces with the Liberals to cut short an initial debate on a bill aimed at ensuring a federal election could be held safely, if need be, during the COVID-19 pandemic. Emily Javesky explains.
NDP MP Daniel Blakey says his party supported time allocation on Bill C-19 after the Conservatives made it clear they're only interested in blocking the bill. The move ensures the bill will be put to a second reading vote tomorrow. Conservatives are complaining bitterly that they've only had 4 hours to debate the bill since it was introduced almost 5 months ago. But they also used a procedural tactic to eat up the 3 hours that were supposed to be devoted to C-19 today. Emily Javesky, The Canadian Press.
Another piece of sound that raised some eyebrows yesterday was said by federal NDP leader Jagmeet Singh, who said he believes there's a connection between anti-mask and anti-lockdown protests and far-right extremism. Singh says some of the people being drawn to recent protests are affiliated with far-right groups.
And to brazenly not follow public health guidelines puts people at risk, and that is something that we've seen with extreme right-wing ideology, putting people at risk, not being concerned about the safety of others, not being concerned about the welfare of others. There is a connection, certainly.
Singh's comments come as rallies against COVID-19 health orders are being staged across many parts of the country, while many provincial doctors battle a deadly wave of the COVID-19 pandemic. Singh says refusing to listen to COVID health orders is dangerous and needs to be called out. It's a pretty bold statement by the leader of the NDP, and it's one that some research emerged throughout the rest of yesterday trying to back that one up. I'm not going to go as far as to say that, but I will say no matter what stance or belief you hold, it's always worth looking at who your allies are to give you a sense of maybe if you're in the group that you want to be in or the group that you don't want to be in. You will be judged by those you keep company with. That's a life lesson you learn early on in life. So it's always worth looking around and seeing who your allies are, depending on whatever stance you want to take on whatever issue. I've got one more story coming to you out of the United States. The sound caught my attention yesterday as well. A new White House task force is looking back at instances when politics interfered with science and trying to come up with ways to prevent that from happening again. Dr. Jane Lubchenco is with the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy.
We want people to be able to trust what the federal government is telling them, whether it's a weather forecast, or information about vaccine safety or whatever.
White House officials point to politics influencing the science during the coronavirus pandemic and on the subject of climate change during the Trump administration. The panel will have its first official meeting on Friday. Let's bring in Mike Ross. It's time for the big business story of the day. Mike, some news coming out of the retail world this morning.
Yeah, this is kind of neat. Hits close to home for me, for my wife, because we both in our high school and university days worked at a Giant Tiger store in Ottawa. And Giant Tiger is a Canadian retail establishment, has been around, I believe, now celebrating its 60th anniversary. And they've announced plans now to increase their store count to 300 across the country, up from its current 259 locations. They are also looking to invest big time in their e-commerce. They're saying, of course, given the pandemic situation, having a lot of their stores having to rope off some of the non-essential sections of their store, they've gone very high tech with their presence on the web and their e-stores, and they want to put more of that money into that. Now, Giant Tiger, of course, is a store that is a bit of a staple in a lot of small town areas, but is also increasingly under pressure from bigger stores like Walmart. In fact, they were saying recently that when it comes to most of their stores, there is a Walmart within about 5 kilometers of their stores in about 90% of cases. So they have managed to basically sort of sandwich themselves in between Walmart and a dollar store as far as the products that they offer and as far as the price point at which they can offer those prices. They can beat Walmart on a lot of their items, but they give the customer a smaller, less box store feel. And apparently they're saying, according to their numbers, that a lot of the customers do appreciate that smaller, sort of more community-based feeling. And that is what's fueled $2 billion in sales per year for this franchise. So they are looking to expand, adding 41 stores in the next few years right across the country.
Mike, you mentioned the special connection because you've worked at a couple of one of these locations during the course of your life. Leaving the pandemic aside, is there anything better than going for a graze or a prowl through a Giant Tiger?
I tell you, I love it. I mean, I think of even now, as we have one where we live in Ajax, Ontario, we shop there, and it's some of the finds that you will get and the price that you will pay is absolutely astounding. And it is a solid Canadian company, and they've always been that sort of community-based, that neighborhood store where, and I remember when I worked there, Dave, we had our regular customers, and it was something where you knew your customers by name, they knew you, they knew the staff, and they really enjoyed their shopping experience there.
A couple of weeks ago, our boss, Andy Frank, responded to a Facebook meme where it asked, if you were given $10,000 in 1 hour to spend it in one single store, where would you go? Now, our boss answered Costco. I put that to a bunch of my other friends. A few folks said IKEA, Canadian Tire, but I think 10 grand in a Giant Tiger could go a long way.
I think, well, if you're looking at Costco, you may get your 50-pound bag of I don't know what. But I think, yeah, you're right. You will get a much larger variety of items that can go a long way if you went to a Giant Tiger.
Giant Tiger, sure. Absolutely. Hey, Mike, thank you for being on the prowl for these great business stories.
Oh, Dave, that was good.
I made an utter joke to Lawrence before, but he didn't get it when we were doing the cow thing, but that's all right. You know, I do what I can. Mike, we'll talk to you a little bit later for the regional
move
news.
Move over, Lawrence. Thanks, Dave.
Oh,
bye-bye.
That's Mike Ross with the big business story of the day. I have your accessibility story roundup. Okay, so we're actually going to be starting with a bit of copy. I know there's an image on screen right now to a CBC article. Maybe just hold off on that one for a second, guys, because I've got some news here coming out of Toronto. It's almost like the vegetables before we have our dessert. So COVID-19 vaccination town hall masks are going into effect for Toronto residents. So Toronto Public Health invites people who live, work, or study in Toronto to a town hall about COVID-19 vaccines. Dr. Vanita Dubley, Associate Medical Officer of Health, will answer your questions about COVID-19 vaccines available in Canada, safety and benefits of vaccines, how to get vaccinated, and who's eligible, and ways to reduce spread of the virus. There's no registration required, and you can choose from any one of these three upcoming sessions, the first one being on Wednesday, May the 12th. That's tomorrow from 6:30 p.m. Eastern to 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. There's some phone numbers where you can log into this one. It's 416-915-6530 with an access code of 13351883. There's also an online password to log in online. You know what I'm going to do? Instead of reading you big, long website addresses, we'll just put this up on the blog after the show, ami.ca/nowblog. So there's going to be a session tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. There's going to be a session on Thursday, May the 13th, from 11 a.m. Eastern time to noon Eastern time. Again, there's going to be phone access and online access to that one. But again, we'll put that up on the blog, ami.ca/nowblog. And there's a third session going on this Saturday, May the 15th, from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern time, again, with both phone and online access into that one. And we'll make sure to put that up on our blog after the show, ami.ca/nowblog. Now, those were your vegetables. Now let's have a little bit of dessert. This one coming to us from CBC News, written by Nicole Mortellaro. Astronauts with disabilities can apply to Europe's space agency for the first time. In its most recent recruitment call for the six astronauts, the European Space Agency announced that the para-astronaut feasibility project aimed at including candidates with some physical disabilities. Aside from fulfilling rigorous requirements, which include having to have a master's degree or higher in natural sciences, medicine, engineering, mathematics, or computer science, the astronaut candidate can apply if they have a lower limb deficiency, for example, due to an amputation or congenital limb deficiency, they have a leg length difference, or they have a short stature below 130 centimeters. The vacancy closes on May the 28th, with final selection in October of 2022. Now, while the ESA's program may be a welcome start to many, it's just that. It's only a start. There's so many other disabilities that are being excluded from this. But the current plan, which has a 1 million euro budget, is to reassess hardware, training, and other mission elements to determine what modifications may be needed to ensure people with physical disabilities are able to operate safely in space. While no other space agencies are exploring missions for astronauts with disabilities, an emailed statement from NASA says they are following the ECA's program with some interest. NASA applauds the ESA's emphasis on diversity and inclusion for its para-astronaut selection process and program. NASA shares a common goal with our commercial and international partnerships to make space fully accessible. So, again, very, 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 very small step. A lot of disabilities still being excluded from this application process, but it is indeed a step forward for space exploration. I don't think you're going to get me into a rocket anytime soon, but still, if that option ever became available, maybe. Maybe. Most likely not. I don't like airplanes. Why would I like rockets? I do want to remind you of an upcoming event coming your way in the AMI family. Our first ever virtual online event called AMI Connect. You can join us starting at noon on Thursday, June the 3rd, and you get a chance to connect with hosts and producers and creators behind a few of your favorite AMI shows like this one, Now with Dave Brown, Kelly and Company, AMI This Week, Employable Me, and that's just naming a few. You can also learn more about some shows that are coming your way on AMI. So there's also some prizing available here. There's random prizes when you attend a session. There's also an early bird prize if you visit amiconnect.vfairs.com to register right now. That's amiconnect.vfairs.com to register. If you register before May 20th, you'll be entered into a draw for your chance to win an Apple Watch. Plus, the first 150 people to sign up will receive an AMI swag pack. So don't delay. Register now. It's amiconnect.vfairs.com. Coming up next, community reporter Elizabeth Moeller will tell you about an upcoming Apple event that is seeking feedback from users who are blind and partially sighted. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Ooh. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. We're not going too far to catch up with our community reporter, Elizabeth Moeller. She joins us from Toronto this morning, although it's all a matter of relativity. If you're listening out in Vancouver, Toronto's a long way away, but typically we're flying a little closer to you to catch up with our community reporters. Hey, good morning, Elizabeth. How are you?
Good morning, Dave. I'm happy to be here, and you're right. Don't have to fly too far just over to Hyde Park, and you'll find me.
Yeah, exactly. It's all a matter of relativity. Everything in life is a matter of relativity. Hey, Elizabeth, you recently had a chance to be part of a panel hosted by the Alliance for Equality of Blind Canadians on inclusive and accessible education. I know that's a topic that you're very passionate about. What can you tell us about this panel that you were a part of?
Yeah, absolutely. So the panel was actually held at the end of April, and it featured five students at various levels. So some of the individuals on the panel were pursuing doctoral studies, some individuals were doing undergraduate, some were just finishing high school. But what was really impactful and I think very telling about the panel is the fact that all of us identified similar barriers, no matter where we were in our education. So one barrier, as we know, it's well documented, access to information. And what I think was really unique about this panel is it went beyond identifying barriers to solutions. So we talked a lot about COVID and how that's impacted our education. And I know we've chatted about that before, Dave. But what I really found interesting is how actually being online has helped a lot of students feel like they can participate more because they're not worrying about traveling to school or booking wheel trans or dealing with the snow and the ice if you're here in Toronto, and maybe the rain if you're out in Vancouver, and just dealing with all matter of orientation and getting to class. And so for some people, especially individuals I've spoken with who have episodic disabilities, really appreciated the ability to log on at home. So one of the things that on the panel we talked about was, could we have a hybrid model whenever we go back to what normal, quote unquote, is going to be? Could we have a model where we're in person and online for folks that require that? And I hope that every class will be streamed online. There's no reason we've shown, there's no reason why it can't be.
It is a very interesting observation. We know through all the struggles and difficult times the pandemic has presented, there is a framework that has been brought forward that could be applied moving forward. So that's an interesting observation, and it's good to see it's being hashed out a little bit in some of these panels. Elizabeth, what were some of your other takeaways in regards to solutions and challenges that are facing students with disabilities?
Yeah, I think a big takeaway really for me from this panel was the idea that it's so important for students at all levels to feel like we are part of a community of collaboration and that we have a response ability. I'm kind of doing a play on words to collective advocacy, because I think what really struck me when I was a part of that conversation is that coming together to share your story can be very, very healing, but also I think it can really motivate and really inspire other people who may be earlier along in their journey or may not have thought about the solution that you're proposing to a specific barrier. I know one thing we talked about was even just strategies around, what do you do when you're in a situation where perhaps you're dealing with faculty who don't understand or aren't as accommodating, and what are some tips and tricks? And we talked a lot even about things like, how can we make sure that content is accessible and that people are trained? And we talked about the fact that a lot of faculty are precariously employed, so they're getting a course maybe 2 or 3 weeks before it starts, and training is not something that they're paid to do, so that's not right either. We need to make sure that universities are providing time for faculty to take accessibility training and paying and compensating as well. So we talked a lot about that. It's interesting for me, I'm a student, but I'm also a teaching assistant, so I'm sort of in this role where I have, I guess, both feet in both sides of the camp, as it were.
Yeah, it's definitely a bit of a balancing act on that one. It speaks to the way we need to find holistic solutions, not just one or two along the way. So definitely well said, well put. Elizabeth, let's go from looking in the past to looking into the future. Because
I know.
Later this month, there's going to be an event called Let's Talk Apple that's going to be taking place virtually. So what's this event about, and who's going to be hosting it?
Yeah, so it's going to be hosted by Apple trainer John Panarese and Apple support specialist Donna Jotten. And Donna's no stranger to this show. I've spoken many times about her mysteries on this show. It's going to be on the 22nd of this month of May on a Saturday, and it's going to be at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So bear that in mind. And it is a first come, first serve, and a limit of 50 people. So they're going to be doing, it's a three-part approach to the event. So the first part is going to be talking about what are your hopes and dreams, and what are your wishes for VoiceOver as a Mac user? So what does VoiceOver do well? How can we expand what VoiceOver does? What are some things you'd like to see it do? And then there's going to be a specific section on iOS, so your iPad, iPhone. And then the third part is just going to be sort of an overall, what do you think about Apple accessibility? So because it's a conversation, the registration is limited to 50, so do get registered quickly. If there's demand, Donna and John are going to host another Let's Talk Apple, but really do get registered because they are going to cap at 50. And the email is provided in the blog notes, so do check that out. It'll go to John for your registration. So do get that done. It has to be done by the 21st of May at noon.
Absolutely. I've got the email address right here as well. And as Elizabeth mentioned, it will be up on the website after the show, ami.ca/nowblog. But in the meantime, if you do have a pen and paper nearby, or you've got your smartphone ready to record or do a voiceover, it's john@macfortheblind.com. That's john@macfortheblind.com. Elizabeth, let's go back to the AEBC because they're going to be hosting a neat event. It's a trivia night, which have been super fun to do during the course of the pandemic. So what can we expect from this event?
Yeah, and you know, I was really deliberate that I brought back in AEBC because the proceeds from trivia are actually going to go to fund more of those wonderful panels that we spoke about earlier and events around education and employment awareness. So I really wanted to come full circle here. So on June 23rd in the evening, AEBC, which is Lions for Equality of Blind Canadians, is going to be hosting a trivia night. Now, tickets are $10, but if you want to sign up as a team, so Dave, that's a hint, $50 for the team. And there's an email there. You can contact Linda Spinney, LSPINNEY at rogers.com to do that sign up. Again, you're going to want to sign up sooner rather than later. And the nice thing about this is if you don't have a team, that's fine. You can go as a solo. But if you want to kind of get your A game on and get your team together, you can do that as well. And like I said, I was really excited to bring this one up because the proceeds from the trivia are going to go to funding more events like the education panel, the inclusive education speaker series, employer awareness and training. So I thought it would be a nice way to sort of wrap up all the work that the AEBC is doing. And I wanted to also mention that the panel that did happen at the end of April is going to be available on YouTube as well, so you can check that out.
Excellent. Yeah, it you did bring that full circle, which is really well done. It's also just fair to note, the trivia nights are a lot of fun. I've been doing them as a host throughout part of the pandemic for my friends. Every time we do a larger Zoom call, which can get pretty unruly and out of control, we've always found a little bit of structure makes it more fun. So I've been kind of tabbed as the group trivia master on some of these Zoom calls.
I'll wait for my invite, Dave.
Well, you might be a little smarter than most of my friends, so they might be a little upset if I bring in a ringer like you. Hey, Elizabeth, always fun catching up with you. Thank you for making time for us today. Thank you for sharing these events, and we'll talk to you again in a couple weeks.
Take care. May the 4th be with you. I know it's past, but...
May the 11th be with you, too. That's Elizabeth Moeller. She's our community reporter in Toronto. And, of course, if you do want more information about the events we covered, for example, like the AEBC Trivia Night, you can head over to our blog, ami.ca/nowblog, ami.ca/nowblog. Although I do have the phone number here for this AEBC event, so I'm going to read that out for you as well. It's 416-456-7117, 416-456-7117, or you can visit their website, blindcanadians.ca, blindcanadians.ca. Just as we're wrapping up the hour, I've got a couple of news stories to share with you. A federal watchdog says he's investigating Pornhub over potential privacy breaches related to non-consensual content posted online. At a parliamentary committee, Privacy Commissioner Daniel Therrien says his office is looking into the pornography site and Montreal-based parent company MindGeek following testimony from women who say Pornhub brushed off their pleas to have videos taken down. Therrien spelled out how the law requires consent to disclose personal information.
There's a further rule which provides that even if consent is provided, a company cannot collect, use, and disclose information if a reasonable person would find that inappropriate.
More than 100 victims of exploitative content and scores of lawmakers have also called for a full criminal investigation into MindGeek, alleging it regularly shared child pornography and sexual assault videos, as well as content shot or posted without the consent of subjects. MindGeek has denied all accusations of wrongdoing, saying it is a global leader in preventing distribution of exploitative videos and images. Operators of the U.S. pipeline hit by cyber attackers last weekend hope most service will be restored by this weekend. Meanwhile, the White House says it's monitoring supply shortages in the southeastern U.S. Julie Walker has more.
Officials stress so far the fuel supply has not experienced widespread disruptions, and President Biden is directing federal agencies to bring their resources to bear. He's also prepared to take additional steps. Colonial Pipeline delivers about 45% of fuel consumed on the East Coast. The attack underscores how vulnerable the nation's energy sector and other infrastructure are.
My administration will be pursuing a global effort of ransomware attacks by transnational criminals who often use global money laundering networks to carry them out.
Biden also says he'll speak with Russian President Putin about DarkSide. The hackers responsible for the ransomware attack are based there. I'm Julie Walker.
Then looking over to the Middle East, Israel has unleashed new airstrikes on Gaza. Meanwhile, armed groups fired dozens of rockets towards Israel. Reporter Ilan Bendian says thousands of Israeli reservists are getting called up as tensions deepen.
The Israeli defense minister has issued a call up for 5,000 reservists, and the Israeli military has said that its foot is on the gas, and that this escalation of violence does not appear to be ending anytime soon.
The escalation was sparked by weeks of tensions in Jerusalem as settlers continued to move on to Palestinian land. A Texas man has been arrested after neighbors found a pet tiger wandering around a Houston neighborhood. The big cat is still missing, but Jim Ryan pounces in with this report.
Residents of a Houston neighborhood were shocked to see an adult tiger prowling around their yards on Sunday.
My dog and I could have been the next snack.
You don't know how it's going to react.
This is where we walk every day.
A man claiming to be the owner hustled the cat into his home, but drove away with it as police showed up. Hours later, Victor Cuevas was arrested, but attorney Michael Elliott insists,
my client is not the owner of the tiger. He's not guilty of any crimes.
But he is out on bond for a 2017 murder. Jim Ryan, ABC News, Dallas.
Let's be clear. Tigers are adorable when they're kittens and still pretty good looking when they're adults. Very dangerous, though. Not good pets. Do not advise having a tiger. Listen, I think alligators are adorable. You don't see me owning a pet alligator. Although if I ever do move to swampland, I would consider getting a gator. Call him Gary. It'd be fun. My friend lives in Florida, and her apartment's pond has a couple gators living in it, and she's got a small dog. I've told her to largely avoid that pond if at all possible. Although a gator not likely to attack you on land, but as soon as you dip a toe in their water, they might come after you because they see you as so gargantuan when they see you on land. But even just dipping a toe in the water can get them riled up. Then they feel like you're in their territory. I have a couple gator facts. They're like my favorite animal. They're actually my spirit animal. They're mostly lazy until they're hungry, which basically describes me. Hey, speaking of asking me questions like, Dave, what is your spirit animal? Next week is another edition of Ask Dave Anything. Next Monday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time, our senior producer, Andrika Delanerol, is going to take your questions for me and put me to the test. So you should get involved in this. Send us an email, feedback@ami.ca, feedback@ami.ca. Send us a tweet @AMI Audio or find us on Facebook at Accessible Media Inc. Or give us a phone call, 1-866-509-4545, 1-866-509-4545. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown, coming to you on AMI Audio and AMI TV. I'm Dave Brown. It's Tuesday, May the 11th, 2021, coming up in the second hour of the show. Nelson Rego of Cool Blind Tech will describe the e-guide dog, a prototype for navigational robotic dogs on wheels. And Karen McGee is back in the mix to compete in the weekly news quiz with Mark Phoenix and myself, Mike Ross, in the Quizmaster chair. We're going to get it on. See who comes out on top on this Tuesday morning. But we begin the hour by handing things over to Mike Ross and the regional news update.
Thank you, Dave. We'll start in British Columbia, where the provincial health officer is calling on everyone who received their first dose of a vaccine before the launch of a provincial registration system to book an appointment for their second dose. Dr. Bonnie Henry says everyone who got vaccinated early last month has been listed as getting either the Pfizer-BioNTech, Moderna, or AstraZeneca vaccine, but their full contact information may not be available. Everyone age 40 and up can now register online, and people 18 and over in high-risk neighborhoods are also eligible for an appointment. The province recorded 558 cases of COVID-19 yesterday, and Henry says that's still too high to consider loosening restrictions. To the prairies, Alberta's justice minister is defending the province's new health restrictions by saying a COVID-19 disaster is what the provincial opposition, the federal government, and the media were looking for and want. Casey Madu made the comments Friday on Facebook, adding an overrun healthcare system would leave patients gasping for breath in field hospitals. Madu's spokesperson declined to explain the minister's comments, but added that Madu won't apologize for stating the obvious. The CEO of the Pharmacy Association of Saskatchewan says some people are getting on COVID-19 vaccine wait lists at several different pharmacies, then taking the first shot they can get. Don Martin says that's a completely fine thing to do, but it does lead to some logistical issues for the pharmacies to work through. So far, pharmacies haven't had much trouble finding other people to fill those slots, but Martin asks anyone who has booked multiple appointments to make sure they cancel extra appointments once they get the shot. The Saskatchewan government says pharmacies are to receive 31,590 of the more than 63,000 doses of the Pfizer vaccine that are set to arrive in the province this week. To Ontario, where the top doctor there says he would like the province to get well below 1,000 daily cases of COVID-19 before current restrictions lift. Dr. David Williams says the province is bending the COVID-19 pandemic curve, but the numbers are not low enough to lift the current stay-at-home order. Ontario has been under stay-at-home order since early April, when the government declared a state of emergency to address surging rates of COVID-19. The health minister says the government is considering extending the current restrictions as experts advise the province to, quote, stay the course. Meanwhile, from the Thinking Outside the Vacine Box file, Peel Region says it will be running an overnight vaccine clinic in Mississauga, Ontario this weekend. It says the Doses After Dark 32-hour marathon clinic will run from 12:30 p.m. on Saturday until 8:30 p.m. on Sunday. The region says it hopes to give out more than 7,600 doses at the clinic in that time. Residents can book appointments for the overnight clinic starting today.
It's a great idea. And
I think so, too. Absolutely. I mean, if there are people who are working long day shifts, this opens it up completely.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of like I used to do when I used to do my groceries at 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah, because I finished work at 2.
100%.
At the place myself.
100%. Vaccination does not live in 9 to 5, right? Vaccination is not a 9 to 5 concept. There's all kinds of people who need alternative hours. That's a great idea by Peel Region.
I think so too, Dave. Finally, in the Atlantic region, 26 people in rural Nova Scotia have each been handed a $2,000 fine for taking part in a church service on the weekend. Under health protection rules announced last month, all faith-based gatherers, and gatherings have been banned to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. The Weston Christian Fellowship Church in Weston, Nova Scotia, was also fined $11,000. The RCMP says the congregation was warned they could face fines under the province's Health Protection Act, but the service on Sunday went ahead anyway. And those are your top regional news headlines going coast to coast across the country.
Thank you so much for that one, Mike. Really appreciate it. Let's bring in our friend Jeff Ryman. He's here for a sports chat. Jeff, it's one of these nights where the sports selection for a Canadian sports fan is not great in the early window because the Blue Jays and Raptors are playing, but if you're not a fan of those teams, there's not a lot of other broadcast coverage across other sports like baseball and basketball. So what we're going to do today is take a look at something from the football world, some news yesterday that lets us know that it's Tebow time again.
Another Tebow time. I forgot about that saying, Dave. But yeah, Tebow coming back for potentially another season, almost 10 years after he last played in the NFL. And mind you, Dave, he's not playing the same position. He was a quarterback with Denver and New York.
Jeff, I got to cut you off here because it's possible there are some fans listening today who have actually no clue who Tim Tebow is. So even before we jump into like his biography a little bit, who is Tim Tebow?
Tim Tebow was an outstanding college player at the University of Florida. He won the Heisman Trophy, was arguably one of the top players ever in college football history. He got drafted by the Denver Broncos in the first round, played a couple of seasons in the NFL as a quarterback, and then ultimately left after he wasn't really that good and decided to play baseball, where he's been playing baseball in, I think, the Mets minor league system.
That's
for
right.
The past 4 or 5 years. He called it quits not too long ago, just a couple of months ago, actually. Been an analyst in and around, I think, the SEC and in and around college football. And then now he decides that he wants to try to reignite his NFL career. So what does he do? Calls up his old college coach, Urban Meyer, where they had great success in Florida. And Urban Meyer says, sure, we'll bring you in as a tryout for tight end, which he hasn't played ever, Dave. Like, he hasn't even played tight end in high school nor college, nor the NFL.
Jeff, I got to cut you off again. For what it's worth, Tim Tebow did spend some training camp with the New England Patriots trying out as a tight end.
And that clearly didn't work.
It did not go well. It did not go well. I think it was back in 2013 he tried to do that with the New England Patriots.
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting journey for Tim Tebow. Honestly, I'm rooting for a comeback story here. This is kind of neat, but at the same time, it kind of rubs you the wrong way in just a couple of spots. First of all, if he hasn't had success at tight end, you know, at any level in which he's played at, what makes him think at 34 years old, 9 years removed from the league, that he's going to magically just all of a sudden be good at football and at a tight end, like I said, a position where he's probably going to get bull rushed quite
a bit by
some of these stronger defensive ends and linebackers within the NFL. Again, Dave, I love a comeback story, but again, there's also those other questions about Colin Kaepernick, who also is a quarterback, who's a younger quarterback, who's a better quarterback, and somehow still isn't on an NFL roster. Again, nothing against Tim Tebow. This is more against all 32 NFL teams that are reluctant to sign Colin Kaepernick. And Dave, I think we even had this discussion maybe around this time last year about how Colin Kaepernick should definitely be in the NFL. And if there are other guys, some quarterbacks that are within the league that are still getting signed, you know, how is Colin Kaepernick still not even at least getting a sniff from any NFL teams who are apparently all on board with the Black Lives Matter movement, and yet, you know, Colin Kaepernick's still unsigned? But
I mean, we know the answer, right, Jeff? I mean, he's been allegedly blackballed from the league. I mean, that's what it boils down to. They didn't like his stance on social justice, and he's allegedly been blackballed from the league. That's what it is, right? So it's one of these things where I sometimes now I'm trying to leave Colin Kaepernick out of these conversations, because it's at this point it's a fair point to raise, but it's one that the NFL owners are not going to move on, no matter how many times we raise it. You know, at a certain point, we do need to put that into the drawer and say, okay, like, Tim Tebow being brought in as a tight end is a little preposterous, but when you consider the relationship with the coach, Urban Meyer, who was his college coach and who really admired Tim Tebow as a leader in his time at Florida, and Tim Tebow was a pretty good leader when he played for the Denver Broncos as well. By all accounts, he was a really good teammate in the minor leagues in baseball for the New York Mets. So I think a lot of this comes down to culture change. And if there's one thing the Jacksonville Jaguars need, and they have needed with the firings they made at the coaching and GM level in the last couple of years, bringing in Urban Meyer, bringing in Trent Baalke, they want a leadership change in that organization, and maybe they feel like Tim Tebow might be the kind of player with, as the 53rd or 54th man on the roster, can be that leader.
Yeah, and maybe this has to do with something about leading Trevor Lawrence as well. I mean, they just spent the first overall pick on, you know, a generational talent in Trevor Lawrence. I don't know how much leadership that Tim Tebow could potentially provide to a quarterback the caliber of Trevor Lawrence, but maybe that is somewhere in that as well. But I don't know why you'd want to bring him in as a tight end. Why not just bring him in as like an advisor or maybe a coach or something? I mean, this guy's going to be 34 years old, Dave, at the beginning of the NFL season. And 34 years old to you and I, not very old, but in terms of NFL, you know, that's getting up there, especially for skilled positions like wide receivers, running backs, and tight ends. So it'll be interesting. And not to mention, Tim Tebow looks like he's in great shape. So, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the knock on him. But at the same time, when you haven't played that position and you haven't even really been in a football locker room for almost a decade, it kind of raises a couple of concerns. But again, like I said, this is nothing really against Tim Tebow. I kind of want him to succeed. I want to see how this plays out. This is more of a knock on the NFL teams, and I'm still disappointed that. And I know you sort of agree with me here, Dave. But yes, he's been blackballed. But I'm just really disappointed that Colin Kaepernick still hasn't been able to get a chance.
Yes, I don't take my statement as saying I'm not incredibly disappointed that Colin Kaepernick is not a quarterback in the NFL because of his social justice stance. Don't confuse me in saying I'm kind of trying to get over that a little bit in the way I analyze free agent signings as being accepting of it. I do not accept it. I think it's preposterous what happened in the NFL to Colin Kaepernick as someone who was on average a better quarterback than your wins above replacement metric in analytics. So what am I going to say there? But you're absolutely right. It does speak to maybe the culture of the NFL, where outside the box thinking is just retreading, right? Instead of actually thinking outside the box and trying something new, they're just retreading the same players over and over and over again.
Yeah. So I do wish Tim Tebow success. It'll be interesting to see how these things play out in Jacksonville. Maybe they can re-spark some of that success that they found in college and in Florida. But hey, I don't know how that's going to translate to the NFL. College and the NFL are two different beasts.
For sure.
It's definitely attracting a lot of attention. That's why I kind of wanted to talk about it, Dave. It seems to be everywhere right now.
And I'm glad we did. I always like doing a little bit of Tebow time discussion, and maybe we'll see him in the preseason in a couple of months. Hey, Jeff, thank you for this. Have a great day.
You too. See you, Dave.
That's Jeff Ryman. He's at the AMI Sports Desk. Nazreen Abdel-Majid has your national weather report. She's at the AMI Weather Desk.
Thanks, Dave. Here is your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada. In Cornerbrook, we're expecting showers, then cloudy, with a chance of showers up to 2 millimeters with a high of 6. Charlottetown, sunny, then a mix of sun and clouds with a chance of showers and a high of 12. St. John, mainly cloudy, with a chance of showers, fog patches dissipating with a high of 9. In Quebec City, showers, there's a risk of a thunderstorm and a high of 10. In Toronto, a mix of sun and clouds, becoming cloudy, 60% chance of showers and a high of 14. Sault Ste. Marie, cloudy, 60% chance of flurries, becoming a 60% chance of rain showers, then a mix of sun and clouds with a high of 8. In Brandon, mainly sunny with a high of 19 and a wind chill of minus 8. In Regina, mainly sunny with a high of 19. Lethbridge, sunny, then a mix of sun and clouds with a 60% chance of showers. There's a risk of a thunderstorm with a high of 15. In Red Deer, we're expecting a mix of sun and clouds, 60% chance of showers. There's a risk of a thunderstorm, fog patches dissipating, and a high of 15. Whitehorse, cloudy, with a chance of rain showers or wet flurries, then a mix of sun and clouds, and a high of 11. In Kelowna, it's sunny with a high of 20. And in Vancouver, it's mainly sunny with a high of 17. And that was your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada.
Thank you very much, Nazreen. We'll talk to you a little bit later in the hour to find out what's trending on social media. But coming up next, Nelson Rego of Cool Blind Tech will describe the eGuide Dog, a prototype for a navigational robot dog on wheels. But first, some solar panels are offering up a subscription model. Here's Alex Stone with Tech Trends. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Let's talk tech with Nelson Rego of Cool Blind Tech. And Nelson joins us this morning from Edmonton, Alberta. Hey, good morning, Nelson.
Hey, good morning, Dave.
So, Nelson, you got a couple neat stories lined up for us today, and we're starting over in Singapore, where students at Singapore Nanyang Polytechnique have developed the eGuide Dog, a prototype for a navigational robotic dog on wheels. Nelson, I'm going to give a little description of this one, because we're about to put an image up on screen of a long push handle attached to a plastic dog on wheels with sensors on the ears. So, Nelson, I've done some of that description work, but tell me, how does this eGuide Dog work?
Yeah, I think my daughter has one of those dogs. It does look like a toy from what I'm told. But it's on wheels, just to give an idea. So it doesn't have moving legs. So it's got the rolling wheels, And basically it's using lasers to identify what's in front of it, obstacles, and it it has a handle instead of a leash, which is actually I think probably good for someone who's blind, considering that's what people with guide dogs tend to use are the handles, since you don't get as much feedback with the leash. When we're talking about that that kind of mean guide dog that a few weeks ago, which for some reason was on a leash, but so basically that's kind of what it does. It's using the wheels to assist in its navigation, and it's not using so much GPS on this particular one. It's more using a compass integrated into the wheels, so as it rotates, it actually lets you know roughly the location that you're at and where you're going to.
So we know when we say e-guide dog, that could create a lot of different perceptions in people's minds. What are the main functions they're hoping to achieve with this e-guide dog?
They have three primary functions for this particular dog. So for navigation, like I mentioned, it has the it lets you know there's pre-recorded paths that you want that you could be on. So if you want to go to a destination, it'll give you that feedback verbally based on there's a little short clip video that I was able to find on you. It was only 13 seconds long, but it was the only one I could find in relation to this particular dog. But it does have a very clear English voice that I was listening to giving the user directions. So that part is for the navigation. The other part is obstacle detection. And it's using the lasers that are built into it. And when I'm talking lasers, I'm not talking something that will hurt you. It's just little lights emitting out, so it gives it feedback of where it's at. So it's something that's very it's actually similar to like face identification. So that sort of thing, where it's emitting lights that people can't really see, and that's giving you feedback, and it'll actually help you go around those obstacles as you're navigating your surroundings. And then the third thing, which is actually different from what I've seen in these type of devices, actually identifies traffic lights. So it's using artificial intelligence, and that's I don't think dogs can see color.
No, dogs, I could be wrong. Dogs are colorblind.
Yeah, they're colorblind. So they wouldn't be able to see the lights turning. I'm sure there's other means that they could do with the traffic flow. But this particular dog will actually sense the traffic. It'll actually notify you to actually go. And it has an additional thing of, I failed to mention, that it'll actually bark as well. If there's an obstacle that's coming up to, they gave an example of a cyclist approaching you. It'll actually bark, which is kind of cute.
Well, that's good. A little bit of natural realism in our robots, you know, still doing these natural things.
Yeah, so those are the three primary functions that it has.
Nelson, we know when we're talking about a product that could be, in the end, used to serve the blind and low vision community, it's important to note, was there collaboration with the blind community during development?
Yeah, so unlike the other guide dog that we talked about a few weeks ago, these people actually collaborated with the, I think it's called Guide Dogs Singapore, which is their main charity that they have. I hate to say charity, but it's their main charity that's out there that supports the blind. So they worked with them, the volunteers and the actual guide dog users, to actually develop this technology. So while they're making it, not sort of an afterthought. So that's kind of cool that they've actually incorporated the actual users to develop this technology.
Nelson, staying in the navigation world, but going from Singapore to Austria, the Austrian company Tech Innovation has developed a smart shoe called InnoMake that literally tells you where to go. So Nelson, how does this smart shoe work?
Yeah, this is real stuff. We're talking about something real. This isn't, we're not making this up. So basically, I think we've mentioned this before with other countries, but this company is actually making this product. So it's using a number of technology. So basically, there's a module that you can put on In the video, it shows you can transport it to different pairs of shoes. So, in the video, I think it was describing a particular shoe that it was fitting on. It was kind of hard to understand because there's audio description and then there was the Austrian accent. And so I was trying to follow it. I'm not sure if you caught the video, but I posted it as a link to the article. But it was actually really cool. It's using a number of technology. It's using ultrasound. It's using haptic feedback. It's using audio feedback. It actually will work with your a smartphone. So if you need to have the audio feedback, you can have those the bone conducting headsets that people use. And then it has LED lights. which is what my daughter has on her shoes. So it's got the LED lights, so someone who has some vision, it could actually give them feedback if there's an obstacle. So that helps those people with some vision left over.
I do get jealous when I see kids running around with their light-up shoes. You know, I'm thinking, like, I might want to bring that style back for myself as well. Nelson, so obviously these are going to be battery-powered, and I don't know, sometimes you're out for a long day. So how long are the batteries in these shoes designed to last for?
They mentioned that if you use it on a daily basis, they didn't say how long for, but they said on average it lasts for about a week of usage. And then if you need to recharge it, it's about 3 hours to recharge it. The one thing I didn't like too much about it is that you have to plug in a micro USB, and I was hoping with the kind of money that it's going to cost to get these shoes, that you think they'd go to USB-C, but I'm not a big fan of micro USB. It's just they're horrible connections. But yeah, it connects with that to charge up your shoes. So, I think it's pretty cool. I mean, I wish I could try a pair on, but that's how long it lasts, for about a week.
Any sense of when these might be available to the general public?
Well, there's two forms of this technology. So the one that they have available that's now, it's $3,800 US. I think it's 3,200 euros. So it's they're not cheap. And then there's another version that they're coming out with, and that's using a camera system. And that supposedly can detect drop-offs, like ditches or potholes or something like that. So that one is not quite available, but the one that we're talking about now, you could actually buy it from this this company, if you have the money to spend for it. But it's, you know, the people that are using it, and in the video that I was watching, I found it very impressive.
You know, there are some people out there, Nelson, who would spend $3,800 on a pair of shoes. I am not one of them, and I don't know if you are either, but there are some folks out there. Put some Gucci on that, next thing you know, bada bing, bada boom, we're moving some shoes.
I have a great idea for these shoes to save battery. I just thought about it. By clicking your heels three times, you can turn off the battery, and it can extend the battery life if they enable that feature. So they can take that idea.
At this. Nelson just offering up free advice like that. Someone offer this man some consulting fees. Hey, Nelson, before we let you go, we're going to have you do some consulting for us this week with your weekly tech tip. So you wanted to tell us about some of Google's new assistant features.
Yeah, Google just came out with a bunch of features. Everyone, of course, is... I hate to say it, but lockdowns out here in Alberta, everything's been shut down pretty much. Kids are back at home, so all the schools are shut down. So there's additional features. It's called an announcement. So you say the keyword, and then you can actually make announcements. Now, before, when we're talking about this, you can make announcements throughout the house to other speakers. But this one is actually available to iOS and Android mobile phone users. So if you have the Google Assistant on your phone, it'll actually make that announcement to your phone, and then you could reply either verbally or I think by text. So that's one pretty cool feature for those announcements. The other thing is something that I like to do. It's creating a family bell, and because the schedules are just crazy, like there's independent learning, there's small groups, there's full class settings, there's the breaks and recess, and So this actually, if you enable that feature or create a family bell, there's ones that are set up in advance that you can just select, or you can customize it, and it'll actually give it notifications either on one device or even if you choose to, on all your devices. Because I'm always constantly setting manual timers, and it'd be nice just to have it preset, mm-hmm. and then just kind of just, you know, what the timers are for. So that's rolling out. You do have to go into the app itself to start it up, because I tried doing it on the my speaker, and it was asking me to go to my my Google Home app to make the changes. So you have to do a few things in advance to make it work. And then there's a few other things. There's stories. So there's new stories that are available. There's new games that are available. So if you want to have your device read to you, you could just ask it to read a story. There's Am I Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? I think that's the new game that they're coming out with. I personally don't think I could be smarter than a fifth grader. But that's one feature. And then a number of other things that they're releasing, like hand washing and things like that, like brushing your teeth. So they got that stuff available. So it's available in Canada already. So it initially rolled out to the US, but like I said, I tested a number of these features, or trying to, and it seems to recognize that the features are available in Canada.
Look at Nelson keeping his house on a tight schedule. Vice Principal Rago, the Dean of Discipline. That's how it rolls when you're with Nelson Rago. Hey, Nelson, have a great day, man, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Great. Take care.
That's Nelson Rago of Cool Blind Tech. He joined us from Edmonton, Alberta. Coming up after the break, we'll find out what's trending with Nisreen Abdel-Majid. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Let's catch up with the crew. We'll start by going down the hall to catch up with Daniel Penamondo and the Entertainment Report. So, Dan, what's going on in the world of entertainment?
We got a couple things. I know some people are going to be excited about this one, but we have another trailer drop. This one is for the sequel to Venom, and that's entitled Venom, Let There Be Carnage. It's the long-awaited trailer. I heard a little chuckle. Did you not know that?
What a great title for a sequel.
Let There Be Carnage. So viewers get a sneak peek at the red symbiote character from the comics, who was briefly introduced at the end of the first Venom film released in 2018. Now, in the trailer, Cletus Cassidy, played by Woody Harrelson, is a crazed serial killer. He survives a lethal injection in prison, which appears to awaken the symbiote inside of him and transform him into Carnage. Now, he and Tom Hardy, whose character Eddie Brock has made some peace with his alter ego Venom, battle it out, of course, in a massive symbiote showdown. It's releasing September 24th, 2021. That again is Venom, Let There Be Carnage. And the first Venom has been in my Netflix queue for about a year now, so I'll get to it eventually.
Our old senior producer Kevin Filippopile loved that movie.
Yeah, he was a pretty big fan of it, which I was surprised by. And you know, that's high praise coming from Kevin.
It's
definitely on my list. Next up, we have let me start this off with a question, Dave. We've heard all of the hoopla about the ratings for award shows going into the dumpster for the lot of them. What's worse than just having crap ratings for your award show?
Not having an award show at all.
Bingo. Not having an award show. That's the correct answer. Hey, if I was an ACR, I would give you the little ding. NBC has pulled the plug on the Golden Globes, and it looks like much of Hollywood is doing the same. The network says it will not carry next year's award show put on by the Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah, so as of now, it is not going forward. This move comes as the HFPA faces mounting pressure to diversify. Just before this year's awards, it came out that the organization didn't have a single black person on the panel that chooses its honors.
Oof.
Yeah, at that point, it's like, you know, they're doing it on purpose. Like, not having a single black person in the large organization that picks the winners, it's, yeah. So Tom Cruise actually, so a lot of celebrities are speaking out about this, and rightly so. And I think the one that made the most headlines, again, going back to Tom Cruise, I know we talked about him yesterday, but he actually yesterday, 1 or 2 days ago, he showed up at the offices of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association to return his 3 Golden Globes that he won throughout his career as a stance to say, I'm not with this. You guys need to change your practices. You need to change the way you kind of do things from the ground up, from the top, bottom. Either way you want to go, the whole organization needs to be kind of reformed a little bit. So a lot of celebrities are standing up about this, and rightfully so. So as of now, there are no Golden Globes scheduled for next year, which is big news.
That's
so,
huge, huge news.
Yeah, there you go.
Daniel, thank you for bringing that to us.
You're welcome, Dave.
That's Daniel Panamano with the Entertainment Report. We now turn to Nazreen Abdel-Majid to find out what's trending. Nazreen, you've got some information coming off of social media, which is in relation to a story that I reported in the news at the end of the first hour.
Yes, exactly. Dave, in the first hour, you mentioned the story on Israel unleashing airstrikes in Gaza. I'd like to expand on that. First off, the image shown on screen, will be shown on screen in a moment, shows a Palestinian boy watching smoke blowing from Israeli airstrikes today on the southern Gaza region of Khan Yunis. So according to the Associated Press, Israel unleashed new airstrikes on Gaza early this morning, hitting a pair of high-rise buildings believed to be housing militants as Hamas and other armed groups bombarded southern Israel with hundreds of rockets. The escalation was sparked by weeks of tensions, the Sheikh Jarrah evictions, forcing families to leave their home then and now, not giving them an option to stay home. And since yesterday sundown, 26 Palestinians, including 9 children and a woman, were killed in Gaza, most by airstrikes and still counting. The Israeli military said at least 16 of the dead were militants. During the same period, Gaza militants fired hundreds of rockets toward Israel, killing 2 Israeli civilians and wounding 10 others. The rockets and airstrikes were preceded by hours of clashes between Palestinians and Israeli security forces, including dramatic confrontations at Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, a sacred site to Muslims. Zionists locked Al-Aqsa Mosque while families were in there and used tear gas and bombs, suffocating them. In a sign of widening unrest, hundreds of residents of Arab communities across Israel staged overnight demonstrations denouncing the recent actions of Israeli security forces against Palestinians. It was one of the largest protests, peaceful protests by Palestinian citizens in Israel in recent years. So, Dave, I can't even put into words how I felt yesterday. As many of you know, I'm Palestinian, but watching these videos and looking at these pictures and reading the stories, it's just a never-ending cycle between Palestine and Israel. And, just reading this, it's such an emotional moment for all of us, a lot of us going through this. And not being able to do much about it is even crazier. And the fact that not one country is helping is even crazier. I watched this video of 3 kids just making a fun YouTube video. One was, I think, 4, 6, and one was 8 or 9. And they were just making a cooking video on YouTube. And all of a sudden, while they were laughing, you hear a bomb in the background. And they start to scream and hide under the table. And I just couldn't hold it together watching that. Not knowing if your child is going to make it the next day, that's crazy. And it just makes me think how precious our lives are and how the luxury that we have. We don't even think about that on the daily, but them trying to survive every second of their life, thinking about their kids, their parents, their siblings, every second is beyond what we can do. And I just wish everybody there some peace and eventually some peace. And I'm praying for them every day.
Nazreen, there's nothing I can add to those eloquent words. That's very well put. Thank you for sharing this story with us this morning.
No problem.
That's Nazreen Abdel-Majid with What's Trending. Mike Ross is here with This Day in History, the Now of Then.
Should I today?
King George VI was crowned. His coronation was heard throughout the British Empire on the very first worldwide radio broadcast. On this day in 1970, Montreal was awarded the 1976 Olympic Games.
Still paying for them.
I was just going there. Yes, on this day in 2020, they're still paying for it. and on this day in 2019, in one of the shots heard round the country, Kawhi Leonard's 15-foot jump shot at the buzzer lifted the Toronto Raptors to a 92-90 victory over Philadelphia and got them into the Eastern Conference Finals for just the second time in franchise history. And those are your events and happenings this day in history.
Thank you very much, Mike. Now let's come back to today when Kelly and Company hits the airwaves at 2 p.m. Eastern time on AMI Audio. Ramya Amuthan is the host of that show, and she joins us now. Good morning, Ramya.
Morning, Dave.
So, Ramya, what do you guys have coming up this afternoon on the show?
Well, we're talking about summer foods because summer's just around the corner and we should be excited about some of the cool things that are in season for this summer. Julia Caranches has our picks for us and their nutritional values, of course. And we're talking to a Mohawk College student who's developing a creative way to raise awareness for accessibility in the blind and partially sighted community. We're going to learn more about this with accessible media production student Rachel Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Also, one of my favorite segments of the month, it's our collections and hobbies segment. And we're talking to Debbie Eva Williams today, who usually joins us for accessible gaming once a month. But she's going to tell us about her love for music boxes and how she wound up accumulating so many, or maybe so few, but, you know, they're sentimental.
I love your collectibles segment. You always find out such neat interests of people all across the community. So cool. So I'm looking forward to hearing that one today. Ramya, have a great day. Have a great show. And we will talk to you tomorrow.
Talk tomorrow.
That's Ramya Amuthan. She's the co-host of Kelly and Company, which comes your way at 2 p.m. Eastern time on AMI Audio. Coming up after the break, Karen McGee back in the fold. Mark Phoenix returns. I'm in my chair. And Mike Ross is here to play Quizmaster as part of our weekly news quiz. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. I always love this part of the Tuesday show because I get to wash my hands of hosting duties and hand things over to Mike Ross for the weekly news quiz.
A regular cast of characters back. Of course, Dave Brown. He's our regular contestant, along with Mark Phoenix in Toronto. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Mike. How you doing?
I'm great, thank you. Good to have you back here again. And happy to welcome back to the show from Morrisburg, Ontario, Karen McGee. Hi, Karen.
It's nice to be back. I missed you guys last week.
We have our three contestants ready to go. We have three rounds of questions. Each question comes with three potential multiple choice options for our contestants to hear. Now, if they can answer the question correctly without hearing those options, I'll give them 2 points. If they need to hear the options and get it right, I give them 1 point. If they get it wrong, we move along until the point is awarded some way, somehow. And Karen McGee,
wait, Mike,
with
Mike,
having you...
I need to interrupt you for 1 second. Sam Robinson has not received a copy of the script today, so it's going to be up to you to give us the right or wrongs before we get dings or buzzes.
Fair enough.
Oh, wait a minute.
A little kawaii there. I love it. Okay, Karen McGee, you go first here with the question number one in round number one. What automaker announced a recall of more than 660,000 of its vehicles in Canada, Mexico, and the United States?
There's been a few recalls recently, but I'm going to say Hyundai.
Incorrect. Sam Mark got, Phoenix.
Sam got a copy of the script, by the way. That's why the sound came in there so easily.
Yep. okay, Mark?
Well, unfortunately, I would have guessed Hyundai too, so I'm going to take the options.
All right, your options are General Motors, Ford, or Fiat Chrysler?
The big three, eh? Well, let's go with my dad's former employer, Chrysler.
Incorrect. Dave Brown.
All right. It's Ford.
It is Ford. 2 points for Dave. As a Ford Motor Company recalling 661,000 Explorer sport utility vehicles at the request of U.S. regulators because retention pins could loosen and allow roof rail covers to detach from the vehicle. The recall covers vehicles from 2016 to 2019 and includes 36,419 vehicles in Canada alone. So, Dave with the 2 points. Mark Phoenix, this question's for you. Students at what Canadian university are taking a fresh approach to tutoring with a pay-it-forward service?
Oh, that's interesting. I haven't heard of this, so I'm going to take the options.
Your options are McMaster, Concordia, or Dalhousie.
I'm going to go with Concordia.
Incorrect. Dave Brown.
No, you can't count on the Stingers for anything good. It's a McGill town over there, Mark. I am going to go with Dalhousie.
And you've gotten Karen McGee on the board.
Gosh darn.
Yes, it's McMaster. So Karen gets a point there. The program called Homework Help for Charity was launched in the summer of 2020. And they allow for students from kindergarten to grade 12 to be tutored remotely right across the country at no cost. And instead of a fixed pay per session fee, the program led by 7 McMaster undergraduates asks families and clients to make a donation of any amount to a charity of their choice. So Dave Brown, 2 points, Karen McGee, 1 point. And Dave, this question is for you. Last weekend, a core segment of China's biggest rocket re-entered Earth's atmosphere and burned up over which ocean?
I was terrified of this. I didn't talk about this on the show last week because I didn't want my fears to expel out onto the general audience. It's dissipated over the Indian Ocean.
That's correct. Another 2 points for you, Dave. People in Jordan, Oman, and Saudi Arabia reported sightings of the rocket debris on social media, with numerous users posting footage of the debris piercing the early dawn skies over the Middle East. The Indian Ocean is correct, and round one in the books. Dave Brown with a pretty commanding lead here. 4 points to Karen McGee's 1, to Mark's 0. And Mark, you're going to kick off round number 2 with this question.
Redemption.
The collapse. Yes, indeed. We're hoping for you here. The collapse of an overpass last Monday caused a deadly crash on the subway system in which city?
Ah, that was unfortunately in Mexico City.
2 points for Mark. Yes, indeed. And we found out afterwards that a 2017 survey of structural damage caused by a major earthquake showed construction defects that should have shut down that subway line. So unfortunately, terrible results there in Mexico City, but good results for Mark as he's on the board here and got 2 points. Dave Brown, question for you. Last week, the World Health Organization estimated that half of the world's population will deal with what eye ailment by 2050?
Oh my gosh. I missed this. This would have been a good accessibility story, roundup story. Paul Daniel holding his cards too close to his chest. Mike, I'll take the options, please.
Your options are glaucoma, amblyopia, or myopia.
I'm going to go with glaucoma.
Incorrect. Karen McGee.
I'm going to go with myopia.
You get yourself another point. The global prevalence of myopia is expected to increase from 27%, which it was in 2010, to 52% of the world's population by 2050. And according to the Canadian Association of Optometrists, it is estimated that 30% of the Canadian population currently is myopic. In addition to its increased prevalence in Canada, it's occurring at earlier ages and progressing at rates faster than seen in previous generations. So we got 4 points for Dave Brown, 2 points for Karen McGee, 2 points for Mark Phoenix. And Karen, this question's for you. Lori Hubartis is poised to become the first transgender athlete to compete in what sport at the upcoming Tokyo Olympics?
I'll take the choices.
Your options are swimming, judo, or weightlifting.
Judo.
Incorrect. Mark Phoenix, swimming or weightlifting?
Swimming?
Incorrect.
It's weightlifting. It's weightlifting.
It is.
I would have known that without the options.
All right. Well, there you go. The New Zealand athlete, 43 years of age, has been essentially guaranteed a spot by the IOC for the women's super heavyweight category following approval for an alteration to the rules, and yet has not been named to the national New Zealand team as of yet. So still waiting for official word from the New Zealand Olympic Committee, but the IOC has approved the entry if Kubartis can make the team. So round two comes to an end. Dave Brown with 5 points. Karen and Mark each with 2 points. We'll see if Dave can put it away right here, ooh, right now. Ooh. Dave, question number 7. What U.S. state's legislature saw the introduction of a bill that would allow the return of the use of the electric chair and firing squads
to carry out
executions?
I saw a clip of some Fox News hosts being absolutely delighted by this, but I need the options.
It was also featured on John Oliver's show on Sunday night. Your options are South Carolina, Mississippi, and Alabama. And I know that may not help you at all because three pretty obvious choices.
Well,
unless you wanted to add Texas to the mix, but you could.
Florida, put Florida in there too. I am hoping this isn't the right answer, but I think it's South Carolina.
Yes, correct. Under South Carolina law, lethal injections are the default mode of execution, meaning that unless an inmate chooses another method, they cannot be forced to die by any other means. The bill opens the door for South Carolina to resume executions for the first time in a decade. And if the state Senate approves the bill, the governor has vowed to sign it into law. Question number 8, Karen McGee. A series of love letters from what U.S. president to his mistress was put up for auction last week?
Oh. I'll take the choices.
Your options are Franklin D. Roosevelt, John F. Kennedy, or Bill Clinton.
I'm going to go with Roosevelt.
The giggle said it all, but not Roosevelt. Sorry. Mark Phoenix.
Wow, I would have gone with FDR too, but I guess I'll go with JFK.
And you got yourself another point. The letters from 1956 were addressed to Gunilla von Post, who JFK met on the French Riviera just a few weeks before he married Jacqueline. And they went up for auction last week. Mark Phoenix, 3 points. Karen McGee with 2 points. And Mark, last question's for you, just for funds. Mark Selby defeated Sean Murphy to become a 4-time world champion in what sport?
Oh, my goodness. I saw this, but it's like one of two games, and I know I'm going to pick the wrong one, but I'm going to do it anyway. It was in snooker.
That's the right one.
Oh,
way to go. Points for you. Yes, indeed. Making it a close game. Dave Brown winning 6-5 for Mark and 2 for Karen. That means our winner is... Ba-ba-ba-ba! Congratulations, Dave Brown, eking it out. Well, we thought you were just running away with it.
Flexing the biceps here. Oh, somebody call the plumber. These pipes are jammed. Mike, Mark, Karen, thank you guys all very much for being a part of this. Mike, excellent questions today because they tipped in my direction. And Mark and Karen, better luck next week. That's all the time we have for thanks, Mark. That's all the time we have for the show today. Don't worry, we'll be back tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Our accessibility reporter, Megan Gilmore, is going to take a closer look at accessibility legislation in British Columbia. Until then, I'm Dave Brown reminding you to play safe, play fair, but don't forget to have some fun.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.